Welcome, everyone, to the Moving to Florida show. Your host, Judson, here, joined by Mohit and Yahya again. Welcome back, gentlemen.
What's up? What's up?
Hello.
Look, we are back in the saddle again, right? You said rock and roll. So we've got a plethora of finance and mortgage topics to discuss today. Man, let's just get right into it. What are we talking about, gentlemen?
Man, I love this, man. This is such a passionate place to be in.
Honestly, it's fun to be back.
It is. And honestly, it's all thanks to you, all of our listeners. Thank you again so much for your support. It's because of you guys, you know, we really feel the accountability here when we don't do this, because like, man, we have to go out there and inform our audience and share this information so they can benefit and not be, I would say, impacted by the fear mongering media that just misinforms everybody.
Let's do it. I know you have some KPI reports to.
I want to make this as fun as possible, CPI, man. It's such a dry thing, man. And it's like, how do I make
this fun? Let's not make it boring. Let's do it.
Guys, you might not need to listen to this episode while you're driving. It might put you to sleep.
No, we're not going to put you to sleep.
No, it's not that boring, man. Come on. You know, folks, it is very important though. I think, you know, and one thing I will say is today we are living in the age of attention. And I love what Judson said here, because in the past, we used to live in the age of information and it was hard to find. Today, we have the opposite problem. We have too much information.
Overload.
Exactly. And it becomes very difficult to find out what's right, what's wrong.
And we three might be just AIs right now.
No, and you know what? That's scary, because it is very scary that you are listening to, let's say, a small piece of the news and it's left unclear. So you fill in the narrative gap yourself with how you understand it. And most of the time we read headlines, we don't really read what's happening. And that causes a lot of misunderstanding. And this is why
clickbait.
This information is important. So if you are, you know, in any shape, where informed, you're working, you're buying a home, whatever you're doing, this will benefit you. So I'm going to dive into it, and hopefully Mohit and Judson are going to help us keep it interesting so it's not too boring. But the CPI, what it is a consumer price index. It basically is just a measure of inflation. And what inflation is a measure of how many dollars are chasing how many goods. So when more dollars chase few goods, you have high inflation, prices are high, things are more expensive. And the opposite is true when inflation is low, there's low demand, there's more supply. So we prefer somewhere to be in the middle where there's a balance. Now, everybody knows and has been feeling the pain by paying $20 for eggs, which is an exaggeration, of course.
Free range eggs, $20.
Right? So that, just to give you perspective, last year, inflation peaked at 9.1%, which was pretty significant.
The Federal Reserve
has a target of 2%. So from 2% to 9%, it's insanely high. Now, the really good news that we were expecting, and I think we talked about this in a previous episode as well, that this summer interest rates are going to come down. They're going to be better. And our CPI report for the headline inflation came in at 4% from 4.9 a year ago. So year over year. So from the peak from 9% dropped to 4.9, from that dropped to 4, which is significant.
I think the peak was last year, right? Wasn't it? Like June of last year was at 9.1.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So if you're looking at that, that's a significant impact. And when you talk about mortgage rates, they are directly impacted by inflation, because inflation erodes the buying power of money. So when money is expensive, you have to face that trouble, unfortunately. Now, the Fed focuses on another reading of CPI, which is the core CPI. This strips out food and energy prices. And the reason they do this is because that's something they cannot control. Energy prices are not something controlled by the Fed, and food prices are not controlled. So they look at what's the balance. And that number came in 5.3 from 5.5, which is 0.2% lower. Of course, it sounds boring, but it's a significant amount of inflation coming down. And why we talk about this is because these things are lagging indicators. You are looking at May's report in June. You're going to look at June's report in July. And if we look at the trend, it is moving downward. And this is something that's favorable, like I said, to the mortgage market because of the pricing of mortgage bonds.
Yep.
So when mortgage bonds are priced, you know, better, mortgage rates come down. Right. And inflation comes down, mortgage rates come down. So the reason why we're sharing this is because the markets are about to shift. It's a little bit of a bumpy ride because of some other factors like used car prices, which also are a part of CPI. And they actually went up a little bit higher. I think it was like 4% or so. So used cars actually went up in price, which messed up the numbers a little bit. But energy prices actually came down by 3.6%. So just to keep this at this, I'm not going to go more into this percentages here, but the bottom line is that things are actually moving in the right direction. It's taking a little longer because of a lot of variables.
Right.
Now, what this means to you in buying a home and moving to Florida is that Florida is a hot state. And we talked about this, I think, in a couple of episodes, that there are certain areas in Florida that are still really popular, but even the not so popular areas are actually now seeing a lot of demand.
Right.
Do you guys agree with that? Have you guys seen that on your markets?
Yes, I have. It's because it's everywhere. I think it's mostly due to the fact that, you know, prices are so high that in Orange County itself, that, you know, people are exploring other options, other parts of the state. They want to stay in Florida, but they're okay with, you know, going to little outskirts of main cities.
Yeah. And
yeah, move further out where it's more affordable. Yep.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know what blew my mind, guys, is like, so we deal with a lot of, you know, contract offers and all these things, right? And I've been seeing people get outbid in the upper $500,000 homes. And then that went up to the $1 million mark. And even a little bit over the $1 million mark, people are still overbidding on prices. Yep. So it's insane to see that even with higher rates, we still have such high demand. And what's scary is, if you think about it, we have such low inventory. If interest rates actually come down and there's a lot more qualified buyers, it's going to be a mess over here because we're going to see
the same. Yeah, absolutely. Well, right? that's as soon as interest rates, you know, come down more, mortgage interest rates, the demand is going to increase, you know, which what is that going to do to prices? Prices are going to go up.
And it's scary because if you think about this, normally higher rates are actually better because you can always refinance. And I know it sounds a little bit of a contradiction when we talk about this, but when you're buying an asset class that is something that you're going to keep for a long term, then it really doesn't matter what the interest rate is because it's relative. You're going to buy this, you're going to live in it. And even if there's this myth, so people say that, oh, what if I buy a home and the value goes down? What happens to me? Nothing. You still pay the same mortgage. You're not selling the house. It's not like a stock you're going to keep and sell and buy, right? You're living in it. So if you live in it, maybe price goes down, goes up, but in the long run, you're still going to benefit. But you'll end up becoming a homeowner. Now, if you wait till the end of summer and let's say rates come back down in the 5% range that the expectations are, and everybody's buying a home and all this money from Hometown Heroes is available, it's just going to be very hard to find homes.
I agree.
And plus, I think what was the appreciation? I think on average, homes are projected to appreciate, by 6% next year?
Yeah, 6%. Right?
And that's a national
average. And that's a national average, yeah. So, I mean, that's exactly. you have to take the good with the bad, right? And look at where people are moving away from. Maybe values aren't as stable versus places where people are moving to. You know, Florida, Texas, Tennessee, Wyoming. People are moving en masse to these states from more expensive areas. Those are the areas that are seeing appreciation.
Yep.
Yeah. Right? So, I mean, Florida, you know, you should expect to see it well above that 6% average.
Exactly. That's what I was going to ask you guys, because you guys are in the market every day, writing offers, helping people with, you know, shopping for homes. What are you seeing in the Central Florida area in terms of appreciation?
We're still seeing a gradual appreciation. I mean, we did see a little bit of slowdown earlier this year and late last year, but I think it's back to a more consistent.
Back to quote unquote normal.
Right?
It's back to normal. I'll tell you, you know, when you were talking about multiple offer situations and all of that, you know, anything across Orlando, anywhere in Orlando, under $350,000, if it's not a piece of crap, it's going to get multiple offers. It's going to go over asking price. I've had clients $20,000 over asking, not get the home. But then even in those higher price points, like you mentioned, I have a client right now shopping 750 to a million purchase price, and he does not want to go over the asking price. We've lost out on three offers in the last few weeks. because they all went over the asking price.
And I think this is important information to share because it's, you know, a lot of times it's very hard to differentiate if somebody's just trying to sell you a property or if they're really trying to help you. And I think when you really objectively identify this, if you look at numbers and math, it will not lie to you. And if you historically look at this and just randomly walk up to someone who you know who bought a home in the last 5 years and ask them, are you upset that you bought a home? I'm pretty sure I could tell you nobody will tell you they're upset because today I believe the numbers are, correct me if I'm wrong, Justin, because you're good in these things. I think the average amount of equity in homes is 48% or more higher.
That's a crazy number. Yeah. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but I have seen a stat that was something like that.
Yeah. So just think about that, like 48% equity or a higher, I think, or something like that. But that's a lot of money to have. And that's money that you can use to even solve problems. And I think, you know what? One thing I will add as a surprise in here, because I think people need to know this, is the recent debt ceiling discussion that actually came up. And that actually impacted interest rates as well a little bit because it, you know, showed a little bit of instability in the economy and it caused rates to go high temporarily. But if we look at how that's impacting us today, and Mohit, I'm sure you would know this, that a debt ceiling has to be increased. Why? Because we have more debt, consumer debt.
Right.
And that's because people are spending more money on credit cards. And we talked about this before that we don't have an average of, I would say, less than $10,000 savings in most people's accounts nationally. So if credit card debt is that high and most people are thinking, hey, I have a 3% interest rate and I'm going to keep this. But on the other end, you have credit card debt and you're paying 25, 30, 29% interest on a minimum payment per month. If you take the average of all the interest rates, including your mortgage, I can bet you you're paying a lot more than 10% there.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason why, again, owning a home, if let's say something happened, you know, extenuating circumstances and you had to incur this debt to do something or make major repairs or whatever in your house, and now you're sitting and thinking what to do, you can actually refinance. And if you do that, even if your rate goes from 3.5 to 5 or 6 on your mortgage, you consolidate these debts, pay them off, your credit gets back to normal, and you actually look at a much better mortgage payment. So at the end of it all, it's really just numbers. So I think, you know, looking at homeownership right now, it's absolutely important to talk to a good realtor because they could really tell you what a comparative market analysis looks like on a home, which is, in my eyes, I'll respect that a lot here, guys, because I'll tell you, it's a true art to do that. And most of the times it comes in very close to appraisal numbers. And it's very helpful for clients to see that because as a real estate agent, you guys do CMAs, comparative market analysis, broker price opinions, and gives an idea of what the home is worth in the current market. And if the home is worth the price and people are overpaying, you'll actually be better off overpaying for this home because if it appreciates at, let's say, a 6% average, you'll make that money back in no time.
Interesting. Well, look, you know, you said it's important to talk to a realtor and get a CMA, but I think it's important to talk to a good lender based on everything you just said, talking about interest rates and combining them and really looking at the whole picture. Because, you know, really, admittedly, even myself, I really just look at a mortgage lender as someone that gets the loan, right? But you're going above and beyond there, right? You're looking at the whole picture and putting together something that's going to work best for them. And that's awesome.
Yep.
No, I appreciate that, man. The thing is, you know, it's a common misunderstanding here. People think that is if you're in the mortgage industry, you're a broker or you're a loan officer, all you're doing is giving people loans. But what we do is a little bit further than that. We actually look at debt management. And what you're showing people is how can you use somebody else's money to leverage yourself to make more money the right way, right? So if you were to take, let's say, a car note at a 9% rate, that's a bad move. It's a terrible move because you're just wasting money. It's depreciating. It's not giving any benefit. Now, if you bought, let's say,
what if it's a really cool car?
Sure, it's a cool car. So you know what? I'll share an example here. So let's say it's a really cool car, and if you bought this car and you only had $20,000 today, and now you got to work more to make more $20,000 to make more money, you're basically limited. Now you take this $20,000. You wait a little bit because cool cars come every year, right? So it's going to be a new model every year. You buy a property and you live in it. You build equity. Now you establish yourself. You built your credit. You own this property. You've shown lending institutions that you can, in fact, take on debt. You paid it off. You got a promotion. Now you have a bunch of equity. Now what you do is you can actually go to the dealership and you can even pay cash for this car by doing a cash out refinance if you wanted to.
Interesting.
And that
and
debt
then you
is
still
added.
Get the cool car.
Exactly. And that money is being added to your loan at that low interest rate that you have. So you're not paying the car dealership anything, right? You're basically just doing this and you can keep on doing that. So it's one particular place where you're growing that money consistently and it's going to keep on growing. And now you have two assets instead of one. So, and the car is flat out cash. So if you're buying a cool car, there you go. But it's just one of those things, like you mentioned, man, we go a little bit further into that because I think, and I want to know the audience's answer to this because this is just my observation and I want to know what you guys think, but it's interesting to me how most people take on student debt between $50,000 to $150,000 to work a W-2 job to pay back that same loan at a higher interest rate. It takes a couple of years to do that. And sometimes it ruins your credit, puts you in tough spots, but nobody really talks about financial literacy and debt management and how you can do it.
We don't teach that in grade school.
No, definitely crazy? Not.
In high school, maybe a little bit in college if you take finance, but that's about it.
And that blows my
financial
mind.
Financial literacy, like, yeah, it's not there. It's nowhere to be found.
Imagine how many families could have a much better life if they just owned a home.
Yeah.
Generation after generation.
It's not
just
even,
imagine
just by owning assets like real estate is such a huge accomplishment and such a huge step forward to financial freedom that, you know, it only makes sense. I know Judson's been doing a lot of investment homes. I know you've been also working on some investment stuff as well. And same thing with me. I'm working on some investment properties as well. But yeah, most of these, if you look at like these hedge funds and all these major corporations, they're still buying homes at 100 to 150 homes a month. Yeah. And they're doing it for a reason. They're not buying and flipping them. They're buying and holding them because they know rent values are going to go up and people with that type of knowledge will end up renting and not purchasing on their own.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute. I know I saw something recently, Blackstone, BlackRock, one of them, Black Nike hat, I don't know. they recently raised a new fund to buy single family homes for real estate investment purposes, $30 billion.
Yeah. Yep.
$30 billion to buy homes. That's your competition. Yeah.
It's kind of hard to compete with these hedge funds. They have all this cash on hand that they're buying, and they're not the small fry that you're in there. They're only going to increase or outbid you. They'll definitely outbid you to get if they really love the house.
And so think about this for a moment, man. Like, you know how we call these people smart money, right? If you have $30 billion, I would say you're smart.
Yeah.
Right? So they had a previous fund, I believe in 2018 or 19, worth almost half of this, like $16 billion or something like that. And now they're doubled almost. And $30 billion is a huge chunk of change. So if that's the amount of money these people are looking to invest in real estate and no other asset class, then why would we not follow where these people are going and invest in that instead of something else? And it's as simple as owning your home. You could just buy a home and that's a real estate investment because you can turn around and do so much with that. And I'm sure you guys have some amazing strategies you can share. And Judson, you do a lot of renovations, right? So I think you can put some good light on this.
I'm working through a renovation right now.
At his new place, right? At your new place.
Oh, yeah. We bought that home in January. We thought it would be a 3-month renovation here. It's mid-June, so we're not too far. We're 5 months in. I do have the new roof scheduled finally, so we're getting close. We're almost at the finish line.
There you go.
But yeah, that's, you know, everything in that project has proved to be more expensive and taking longer than we expected. But you know, labor is getting very hard to find today too. And that actually, you know, we try not to get too political on this show, but I had something else that I wanted to mention. I know Governor DeSantis passed a law a little while back. I didn't even realize it, but I started hearing about it, you know, stuff in the construction industry, talking about a lot of the labor was gone.
They're on strike.
He effectively, he passed legislation that made it illegal to hire somebody who was undocumented. And it's like $1,000 a day fine if you hire somebody that's undocumented. Per person. They are abiding by it, and it has made it I've seen a lot of the new construction. I mean, I'm living in a new construction neighborhood right now. Mo, I know you're living in a new construction neighborhood. Have you seen things slow down a little bit?
Absolutely. And especially in the newer community, my community is almost done. So I had no issues as far as labor shortages for us. I mean, they are complaining about it, like the sales staff and stuff. They are complaining about it, but they're mostly complaining about new neighborhoods that are just have a few homes in there and they're starting to build a lot more. So they are, I mean, they are struggling with labor, and they're, and most of these builders, if not all of them, they subcontract, let's say for drywall installation, and they subcontract every single aspect of your home. They don't build it themselves for the most part.
Yeah, it's not their employees.
It's not their employees. It's the subcontractors' employees that are not there anymore because they've left. And not only housing market, you're talking about even the farming market as well. They had illegal immigrants or undocumented workers working the farms, and they no longer can work our farms anymore because of this new law. So they're seeing the effects of that. So you'll start. I'm hoping this is not the case, but I have a feeling it might be. But your grocery prices are going to start going up in Florida because of the shortage of labor on the farm fields.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And I think we're going to see the same for housing because that's just restricting supply.
Yep. I mean, the supplies might be there. What happens with supply and demand. Just nobody to put them up.
Well, I mean, it's restricting the supply of housing.
Exactly.
Yeah, so supply and demand, I mean, that's just going to cause prices to go up. And I mean, really, we can combine these things, right? We've got construction slowing down. We've got the $30 billion fund, which is not just in Florida. They're buying everywhere, but obviously, they're definitely buying here. Oh, I can tell you that. And then, you know, we've even got build-to-rent communities. Have you guys seen
this? No, I haven't seen this. What's this?
Build-to-rent is a totally new thing where... It's, you know, an entire community gets built of single family homes, but they are only for rentals. Oh. And usually it's one community. Blackstone owns some of these.
I think Disney's doing one of them,
too. And I have seen them. D.R. Horton is building communities like this.
I heard that.
Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, and I've seen other builders, too. I have seen communities that did not start that way, but transition that way. From the builder's perspective, instead of starting their prices low and gradually increasing over time, they build out the community and rent out the community as they're going. So they are collecting that rental income. And then once the community is finished, they're selling a cash flowing asset. They're not just selling real estate. So they sell the entire community that was built as a rental. So effectively, it's an apartment community of single family homes.
As realtors, this is fantastic. We can knock on D.R. Horton's door and be like, hey, I can.
You know, so actually, guys, I wanted to ask you this because I did see this as well. I think this was also one of the bills or something about rental, that there is something in the works or is maybe already passed about if you don't have security deposit, then you can pay a security fee monthly, which is non-refundable towards your rental. Is that something you guys have heard of?
Yeah, I've heard of that. It's just a different way of getting a security deposit from the tenant, but making it easier for them to, instead of giving first month's, last month's, and security deposit, that could be a lot of money. It could be, you know, anywhere from, you know, $5,000 to $7,000 to $10,000 to $15,000, depending on the price of the home. But security deposits are becoming a thing where you can added onto your rent, and then once you reach that security deposit amount, it'll stop.
But is it, so one thing I wanted to clarify was, is it refundable, or is that just a fee that is now non-refundable? No, and you lose that if you go that route?
Security deposit, it's refundable.
Yeah. Okay, so that fee is non-refundable. So if you go that route, you will still end up paying that $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, whatever that amount is, but now it's not refundable back to you. Wow, man. So
and listen, I've not heard of this.
I heard, that's why I was trying to ask this, because I heard this and...
No, we could be wrong. I mean, they might change the rules again on the security deposit stuff and on the rental stuff, because there's a lot of rentals coming around everywhere. I mean, I have 8 complexes just in Winter Garden off of Avalon that's coming here. 8 complexes.
Oh, all of the apartment complexes?
They've stopped.
It's bonkers, man. There's so many in that area.
And it's not even they're building more commercial. They're taking over commercial spots so they can build, apartment communities, which is kind of insane that we need this commercial as well, like restaurants, shops, things for people to do, and they're slowing that down and replacing them with apartment.
Yeah, converting them back to multifamily.
Back to multifamily. Yep. And my fear is that it's going to be mostly apartments here versus single family homes, even though they're starting to build a little bit more single family home. But that's four new communities versus eight new apartment communities. You know what I mean? So it's almost double. Yep. That's happening here in Winter Garden. I mean, it's happening everywhere too.
It's happening everywhere. It's all over Florida, and probably not just Florida. I'm sure it's happening in a lot of places. But yeah, there is a lot of multifamily being built right now.
And Disney's opening their affordable housing soon. They started. I think they broke ground on that on Hartzog, which is here in Winter Garden, right next to the Publix as well. The new Publix that just opened up here in Waterloo area. So just because I live in this area, so I get to see this happening in real time. And man, it's crazy. And the traffic here has just become insane.
Wow. That's a lot going on here, man. I'm really happy we have these different perspectives, because I think it really helps to share, you know, and when we don't know, I think it really gets audience all this information. But thanks, man. I'm really happy that we do these recordings. I learned a lot just being here.
Positive note, with all these apartments coming up, there's going to be competition. So I have a feeling that, you know, rent prices, which are outrageous right now, are going to slightly come down, and that's going to help, you know, people buy homes. It'll be affordable, a little bit more affordable for them to buy homes.
Absolutely.
I guess we shall see. Only time will tell, right? But we are expecting at least 6% appreciation here in Florida, right? Because we are on the growth side of things.
Yeah. No, I think it's fantastic. But what blew my mind just now, Mohit, you said that even for rentals, first months, last months, and all these things can add up to like $5,000-$10,000. Man, if I'm in that position, I'd rather go and buy a home and borrow this money from Hometown Heroes right now.
Exactly.
I'm not trying to be a home buying pro here, but with
purchasing a home versus renting. Because hey, if that apartment complex says, hey, we need first, last, and security, you're talking about an average of $2,000, and you're talking about $6,000 upfront. And not a lot of people have $6,000 just to give up front or break their savings account or whatever.
And so just so I understand this, because I don't do rentals, but as far as I know, to my limited knowledge in this, when you're qualifying somebody for a rental, they still ask for your income to be three times the rent. Right. Your credit score has to be like, what, 600 or 650 or something like that?
Well, it depends on landlord to landlord, but I'll talk about my example. We 640 minimum credit score, three times the amount of the rent has to be your income, no evictions, no foreclosures, clean background check, and that's basically it. That's the basic minimum.
So you're going through a background check.
Yes.
So
yes.
Absolutely.
Okay. So then when you're buying, we're not doing no background check, of course.
Yeah, exactly. If you have a foreclosure, obviously, if you have a foreclosure, it's going to be on your credit report. So that's like a background check.
Sure. But even, you know, on that, there are exceptions to the rule depending on the kind of foreclosure you've had or what kind of bankruptcy you've had. If you've gone into that or if you had a repossession or whatever those things are, there are ways around it. Especially if you're a veteran, there are even more ways around it. But just to be very brief on this, if you're asking for three times the income, then you're basically saying that your debts have to be like, what, 33%? Max, kind of.
Well, right? We don't even look at the debts. We look at just straight income.
So that's of the rental. So if the rental is 2,000, income has to be 6,000, basically. Yep.
Yeah. Correct.
So
we could care less about
and
your debts.
When we talk about
credit card debts and stuff.
Right. So if we're talking about debt to income, now I'm just bringing that up because I think it would benefit people to do this themselves. Yeah. So if you don't want to talk to a lender, here's a quick, really easy exercise to do. If you have access to Credit Karma or anything like that that you're looking at your report at, just go in there, look at all your current open accounts that you have, credit cards, outstanding balances, just basic stuff. And then take your minimum monthly payments, because we don't look at the total loan amount that you owe any creditor. It's the minimum monthly payment. So if a car payment of 400, add that. If you have a minimum, you know, credit card payment of 300, 200, whatever, add all that. And just basically times that by 45% of your income, and you will see what your total is. From that amount, if you look at a mortgage payment, that's an example of, let's say in your area, a home is worth this much amount of dollars, you can compare what's left. So if, to make it a little clearer, so I think I confused some people here, but if you make $5,000, and you take 50% of that, that's $2,500. So from $2,500, if you deduct your credit card payment of, let's say, $200, car payment of, let's say, $300, maybe another two, three little debts here of another $100, that's $600 from $2,500. Take that out, you're left with $1,900. That's your estimated mortgage payment. So if you're looking for to pay around that, and if that's what you're trying to rent, then maybe it's a better idea to buy, because you're able to do that. And if your credit score is above 640, you may be able to get the Hometown Heroes program that we talked about in the last episode. So, you know, it's just something to think about.
More options, that you, may, you have definitely
exactly.
More
you may be able to buy and you don't even know it. So at least give that a chance.
If you are looking to rent in Florida, at least give that a try. Say, hey, you know, let's purchase, build your equity. Even if you say, you know, my job requires me to move often and every year I'm moving from one house to another apartment to another apartment. My brother-in-law started doing, just as an example, he was all about just renting because he's moving so much with his company. And then he finally just said, you know what? With the way the market is, let me just buy something. Even if I move in a year, I can sell my house, make $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, and take it to the next house I purchase, and so on and so forth, and build, you know, equity. Exactly. Exactly.
Yep. All right. Very good. Well, guys, we're at 30 minutes here. I think we need to wrap it up, but I want to offer a quick summation of what we've talked about today, right? Because it was a lot, as Yaya said. So inflation is coming down a little bit. We're definitely seeing some decreases in inflation, which is in turn causing some decreases in mortgage rates, which is a good thing. But with decreased mortgage rates, we're going to see more demand. We're going to see more people wanting to buy. That paired with other things, we're expecting to see an increase in housing prices. I mean, just like we said earlier, 6% on average nationally. We know a lot of people are moving to Florida, so we're probably going to be above that average. Expect prices to continue to increase. And if you can, if it's at all possible, reach out to Yaya, learn about the Hometown Heroes program, because that's going to give you some down payment assistance, some closing cost assistance, so you can go ahead and buy that home when you move to Florida.
There you go.
How'd I do? That's
fantastic. Good summary. All right. Now, we want to hear from you. You can reach us on our Moving to Florida Show hotline by dropping a voicemail or texting us to 407-900-5859, or drop us a DM on Facebook or Instagram at Moving to Florida Show. And for Twitter, our handle is at Moving to FL Show. If you'd like to connect with us, if you have any questions, or if you need a realtor in Florida, you can reach us at Moving to Florida Show @gmail.com. Be sure to subscribe to the show if you like our content, so that it would automatically download to your device and get you one step closer to moving to Florida.